tips and tools.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, good morning, everybody. It is the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and on 710sports.com. You may be tired today. I wouldn't blame you. It was a heck of a sports night last night, man. It really was. Just the opportunity to sit and watch one game end one after another. It was almost like with the like that 1 o'clock time on Sundays when all of the early games are ending at the same time. You throw on Red Zone and it's like, bam, great ending, bam, great ending, bam, great ending. Except you got it on a Monday night with multiple sports. Pretty darn cool. Just sitting there last night, Red Sox walk off the Rays, then watching the NFL game, and Lamar Jackson just freakishly talented. My God, such a fun game to watch, back and forth. And then, you know, they won, Baltimore won, and I sat there and I said, great, okay, they scored a touchdown in overtime. Now Indy's going to get their chance, right? Because it's completely unfair,
yeah.
Right?
But yeah, I saw your tweet about
they
that.
They don't get it.
And fresh off the heels of our ranked top five worst rules in sports.
And once again, the moment you put that idea out there, you get all the same comments every single – it's amazing. The same people make the same comments every time when you say, wow, that's ridiculous. One team had the ball in overtime. Why didn't the other team get it? And they say, well, they had 60 minutes to win it. But,
right.
Like, so did the other team. Why do they only get 60 minutes, but the Ravens got 66?
Because they've called the coin toss, obviously.
Oh, well, that's certainly a skill.
Totally
and something
valid.
You deserve to be rewarded for. Yeah, they got 60 minutes. True, they did have 60 minutes to score more points. But so did the Ravens. And they didn't.
Well,
but then they got an extra 6 minutes.
Wish they were better at coin tosses. This
right. Well, then you get the other argument of, well, then their defense should have stopped them. Okay. But then, like, why didn't the Ravens' defense have to do that? There's, like, a little bit of an advantage to scoring when you have the ball versus when you don't, right? I mean, a little? I know that occasionally we see defensive scores, but isn't there, like, a little bit of an advantage having the ball over not having the ball? It just seems completely ridiculous to me. But great game. Fun to watch. Lamar is an absolute joy. He's a joy to watch.
Absolutely. And say if you're tired this morning, you're probably going to be tired tomorrow because the sports continue tonight.
I wasn't even done with last night yet.
Oh, shoot.
We still had
Giants
Dodgers to get to, and that end of that game was fantastic. And two really good baseball teams going back and forth. And in that case, a 1-0 game, just it looked like it was going to be a home run to end it. Didn't end up being that way just because of the wind. What a just fantastic evening of sports. And yes, Justin, thank you for teasing the lead here. It does get even better tonight. Hockey starts tonight in Seattle. Not physically in Seattle, but for Seattle.
The era of hockey officially begins.
Maura's smile that I just saw, well, that's the biggest smile I've seen since we started this show. Hockey starts tonight. And we've had like so many of these milestones along the way to get to tonight. You ever notice that in life, it's hard to figure out when to celebrate a big moment? Some moments are easy, like you get married or engaged, something like that. They have like one official big moment that you get to celebrate. But like if you get a new job or something like that, it always feels like there's no one exact moment. It's always like, okay, I had a great interview and they're going to make me an offer. Okay, well, do I celebrate the offer? Do I celebrate that? Like then by the time the offer comes and then, okay, and then you got to read it over and then you sign the deal or whatever it is that happens to finally accept the job. And now it's been another 3 days. So do you celebrate now? It doesn't feel quite the same. And then, well, then you've ended up starting the job. Well, now I'm busy and I've got to start the job and prepare for it. There's like never that one time where you should be like, yeah, this is the champagne moment.
Yeah, the anniversary, when it comes back around the next year.
Is that what it is?
No, like, when is that point?
There's
You're
no,
right.
There's never, like, that one exact moment. I always feel like you kind of miss out, right? Like, I missed out on the celebration. So I don't know what moment you choose to celebrate when it comes to the Kraken. Maybe it was the naming of the team. Maybe it was the expansion draft. Maybe it was, you know, the actual when they chose a name. Maybe it was the first preseason game. Maybe it's going to be tonight. Maybe it's going to be next Saturday when they finally open up at home and we get an opportunity to walk into that building and see it for the first time. I think that for the most people, tonight is the biggest milestone. I think. I mean, I could be way off. You guys could tell me if they're, you know, text in 206 421-3776 about what it is that is like the exact moment for you. But I'm just pumped for tonight, and I'm not the only one. JT Brown going to be calling the game of, well, he won't be calling tonight's game, but he'll be calling games throughout the season on Root Sports for the Kraken. He's just pumped for Kraken fans to get to experience this.
I think just, you know, getting to see a game in person. This is a sport that is completely different when you watch, you know, live, especially I was able to see the rink. I think it's going to be an electric venue, you know, for fans to come watch a game. And I think, you know, that's going to be something that's special in Seattle.
Yeah, I love it. And the only reason that I'm going to celebrate, I think, tonight more than the opening night at home is that I just love hockey. Yes, I agree that hockey is special in person. And I think for years, hockey fans and people in the game have said, well, just watch it in person and you'll come to love it if you watch it in person. And while I agree with that, I think it's true. I also think that there's a little bit of a, like, desperation to that. I love hockey on TV. Like, I think hockey is a great television sport, and I feel like hockey fans and people in the hockey community have for years sort of made this excuse of, like, oh, you just watch it in person, then you'll totally get it. It's great on TV, too. HD did more for hockey than any other sport. I really firmly believe that.
Yeah, it used to be hard to watch. You couldn't see the puck.
Yes. It was like, I mean, you may not be old enough to remember this, and this is kind of a dated reference, but when I was a little kid, Wimbledon still had the white ball, and you'd watch tennis at Wimbledon. You couldn't see anything. I mean, it was like an old standard definition. It wasn't in color, thankfully, but like old standard definition TV with a white ball at Wimbledon. You couldn't see anything. You had to like just sort of guess based on the movements the players were making
and what the crowd does.
Went in. Yeah, yeah, like, hey, they cheered. It must have gone in. They're definitely rooting against McEnroe, so there you go.
For those of us who didn't grow up with hockey, I've been to a bunch of Thunderbirds games, but I didn't grow up with it. It wasn't a sport that we played. I didn't even know what hockey gear looked like when I went to the store. You know what I mean? Do you remember the first game you went to?
Absolutely. Bruins 4, Capitals 4. Yeah, I remember going with my dad. I was a young kid. We went to the Garden, the old Garden, which I'm trying. I wish I could describe accurately the smell of the old Boston Garden, but it was a mix of
pub floor.
Worse, yeah, because it was. I mean, you could smoke in there, so there was a mix of what's the yellow just nacho cheese? Is that what you would call that? The gloopy
chemical cheese,
the gloopy cheese? Nacho cheese. It was a mixture of that, cigarette smoke, spilled beer. And like a distinct urine aroma, like all kind of, and sweat, obviously. It smelled like the early 80s. That's when it was. And like, that's to me what the early 80s kind of smell like. But it was amazing. And it had these big yellow girt, like those big beams, like the metal beams. And people would bang. You could make so much noise banging on the beams, on the glass. There were tons of obstructed view seats, which was horrible for people who sat in them. But for everybody else, that's like the ultimate utilitarianism thing. It's terrible for the people who sit behind the obstructed view, but it meant that everything was out like over the ice. It was awesome, man. The old Garden was special, and just the yelling and the intensity, and just it was such a great crowd.
I'll look for that air freshener. The early 80s.
Early 80s Boston Garden.
Boston Garden.
Yeah, I recommend it.
For my car.
Here's the thing.
I'm okay with the nacho cheese smell.
Yeah, that was not bad. It was always the thing I would get whenever I would go with my dad. But I just love watching hockey, and it's that simple. There's kind of three things here I wanted to get into. And the first is that I love hockey. I think that the U.S. loves hockey, too. It just keeps forgetting about it. You got to remember that hockey was a lot more popular before ESPN gave it up, and then it kind of went away because ESPN ignored it for the two decades that it didn't have the game. But this is the sport that galvanized our entire country in the 1980 Olympics. Arguably, the most famous play-by-play call of all time is Al Michaels shouting, "Do you believe in miracles?" Yes. So I think hockey still can capture people that way. Gretzky, Lemieux, those used to be household names, and in some cities, honestly, that's never changed, and they still are. So I love the flow of the game and the way you can anticipate when a goal is about to happen and the fights and the hits and the rivalry and the way the tension happens at the ends of games when it's close and the way the guys just needle each other and stick their gloves in each other's faces and just, like, generally get under each other's skin. I love the accents and the culture and toughness and the code that goes with hockey. There's a lot. The captaincy, which we learned yesterday, and we'll talk a little bit about that coming up here in Need to Know, is special. There's a lot of things about this sport that are special. That's a few of them, but I got a whole bunch more we'll get through throughout the day. So looking forward to talking some hockey with you. We'll have John Buchagrass with us at 8 o'clock, and then Cammy Granato, Hall of Famer, Olympic medalist, etc. She works with the Kraken as a pro scout. She'll join us at 9 o'clock. We're getting pumped. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
I've never complained about the Kraken name. I think it's good. I'm ready to go. Ready for everything tonight. I mean, other people have complained.
Kraken is the worst name I have ever heard.
That's Tony Kornheiser. He was not necessarily a fan. Michael Wilbon didn't feel too much better about it. But regardless of what anybody thinks, it does start tonight. I can't wait. Let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
There you go. There's the horn.
That'll wake you up.
It'll wake you up in the morning. After all the waiting, the building, the introduction of the name, the drafting of the roster, we finally get to see the Kraken tonight as they start their inaugural season. They'll do it in Las Vegas. Seahawks went 2-14 in 1976. The Mariners went 64-98 in 1977. The Sounders a little more successful in their first season. They went 12-7-11 in 2009. While the Kraken are predicted to make the playoffs, they have the benefit of a weaker division and a pretty favorable draft process. So the expectation is this is a playoff team in year one. Yesterday, they named Mark Giordano as the captain, with four players rotating as the two alternates each night. Jordan Eberle, Jaden Schwartz, Yanni Gourde, Adam Larson. So to wear a C has immense history and meaning in the NHL dressing rooms, and players treat that with honor and great reverence. But there is actually an official on-ice role for the captain or the alternates if the captain's off the ice, and that is that they're the only ones designated to communicate with referees. So if there's a rules explanation or something like that, it will go first to the captain. They're the ones who get to argue and have those conversations. Unfortunately, before you get to the game tonight, it does look like COVID has ripped through the roster. Up to five players may end up missing tonight's opener, including first-line center Jared McCann, who's been playing really well. So curious to see how they'll juggle things up, and I guess there's a shot that at least some of those guys may be able to go by this evening. What do you want to watch for tonight? A lot of things. This team is pretty good at controlling the puck, so watch to see how long they can keep the puck in the offensive side of the rink. Watch to see how that first line does, especially without Jared McCann. Can they put the puck in the net? And then does Dave Hakstol, their coach, keep their lines together, or is he still experimenting? We'll learn a lot of that tonight as they take on probably the best team in their division, Las Vegas, in game one of their first season.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
From a great story to an ugly one, John Gruden officially resigning as the head coach in Las Vegas yesterday after a second group of emails surfaced in which he used homophobic and misogynistic language, this following last week's email in which he used racist language to describe Demora Smith, the head of the players' union. The emails were sent from Gruden to Bruce Allen when Gruden was at ESPN and Allen was the team president in Washington. In them, he calls Roger Goodell a homophobic slur, criticizes him for, quote, forcing Jeff Fisher to draft a gay player, although he used another slur, and then also complaining about the hiring of female officials. Oh, by the way, the two also exchanged photos of topless women, including Washington cheerleaders. It's a lot to come out in a very short time. So let's start here. John Gruden forfeits his right to work in the NFL. What he said is gross. End statement. It's also interesting to see how some of this came out and what we can learn from that. So this stems from the investigation into the culture of the Washington football team under owner Dan Snyder. It's interesting that only John Gruden's been taken down thus far. How come? Is he the only one that is going to be a victim of this? I shouldn't say victim. Who is going to be taken out by and exposed by this investigation? So far, he is, which is surprising given how much time has supposedly been spent on it. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, even speculating that the league wanted Gruden to resign and threatened to leak more emails if he did not. I don't know if that's true, but it does fit with the lack of transparency that we've come to expect from Roger Goodell and his league. So questions, how prevalent are emails and sentiments like these ones among the executives in the league? Why would they only leak certain emails, and why did it take so long for it to happen? Do they have a trove of information on other people involved in the NFL that they could either use as blackmail or whatever they want to do with it? Ultimately, I just wonder if John Gruden was singled out because he's the only one who feels this way. I doubt it. He's the only one stupid enough to provide written proof of how he feels, maybe. Or because somebody hated him enough to leak the proof, whereas they cover up for others. And I don't understand how all of that works. We're going to talk a lot more about it today. G. Scott will join me in 10 minutes to discuss.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, if Pete Carroll's going to retreat even further into what makes him most comfortable, he got some good news, it seems like, on that front. I believe the Seahawks will attempt to run the ball more often to try to soften some of the blow of not having Russell Wilson for the next few weeks. And to do that, Chris Carson, practically a necessity. Well, the power running back should be able to go on Sunday. Pete reporting yesterday that he has made a big turn, which I assume is a positive one. Gerald Everett should be back as well. It sounds like Ethan Posick may go, and also Trey Brown. So the news a little bit less clear regarding Bobby Wagner. He's got a bruised knee. His status may be uncertain. We'll find out throughout this week. A game without either Wagner or Wilson, that'd be the first without any member of their Super Bowl team since it happened. Crazy. Busy sports day yesterday's Monday Night Football ended with an OT touchdown. Baltimore beats Indy behind just an absurd performance from Lamar Jackson. 442 passing yards, another 62 on the ground. He was amazing, although I still think Indy deserved a chance to get the ball. Red Sox walk it off for the second straight night. This time a ninth inning sack fly from Kike Hernandez that eliminates the Rays. Braves take a 2-1 series lead. Jock Peterson with a huge home run. And just a great finish in LA. Dodgers, Gavin Lux thought he had a home run to tie it in the ninth. Wynn knocked it down. Giants win 1-0. They lead that series. All right, today, Houston, Chicago, game three. They were rained out. Game four. They were rained out yesterday at 11. Milwaukee, Atlanta at 2 o'clock. And then the Giants at LA again at 6 tonight. That's a lot.
It's a lot of games today.
It's a lot going on, but that's what you need to know.
Okay, so there are eight teams in the Kraken division, the Pacific division.
Yes.
And you said tonight would be arguably the toughest?
Yeah, I think Vegas is probably the best team in that division.
I would agree with that.
Does that mean that they are the rival, or does that go by geographic in hockey?
Well, I think rivalries are earned. I think that you do have the possibility of an immediate rivalry with Vancouver because of the three-hour drive. But who's to say? Like, if you end up fighting back and forth and battling and getting annoyed with the Vegas Golden Knights, then they're your rival. Yeah, geography, I think, has something to do with it. But, you know, Detroit and Colorado became huge rivals. It's not like they're right next to each other. They're in the same division, right? And led to some playoff battles, et cetera. And they just hated each other. I think incidents and hatred tend to create rivalries much more so than geography. But geography doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
And so if you have the opportunity to play a team that is close by and you know them well, even more so if you see their fans often, like, I think one of the things that makes Red Sox Yankees great is, like, you go to the office in New York or Boston and you see fans who root for the other team, and then you got to deal with them and you got to, like, suffer when they talk trash. I think the same is with Michigan and Ohio State or North Carolina Duke or Alabama Auburn. Like, you know, and you're familiar and you're, like, forced into a sandbox with a lot of people that root for the opposing team. That's how you get some really good rivalry. So,
All right,
let's talk more about this Gruden thing, because I think it is messy, and I think what he said is ugly, and the way the league has handled it is, as always, OPEG. G. Scott's going to join me. We'll talk through this together next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, do something a little different here for a few minutes. Usually we talk to G on Fridays, and I think we'll still do that this week. And usually it's just sort of a little football and us making fun of each other. But G, you're actually like a person with a lot of depth and thought about things that go on in the world. So I was excited to talk to you about a kind of gross story, but get some actual insight. Can we have a more serious conversation today? Is that allowed?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Not for the whole time, though. I still want to make fun of you at the end. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, good.
Let's do it.
It's thank you for waking up early for us today. I know it's a big day with the Kraken starting and all, so it's good to have you here this morning. But I do want to talk about this John Gruden stuff. It's ugly, obviously, and the things he said are ugly. Overall, what do you make of what happened and what came out over the last few days with John Gruden?
This is way bigger than John Gruden. And usually what happens is there's always the fall guy. And in this case, there is one. On Friday, there was kind of a warning shot. And as you know, in the media world, Mike, we call it the Friday news dump, right? And so I was kind of curious why it kind of dumped on Friday. That was kind of the warning shot, like, hey, Raiders, you know, we got a little something. You going to make a move? And then, you know, the Raiders let John Gruden coach on Sunday, and everything's good. They actually let him go to the practice facility on Monday. They held practice on Monday. He actually had a meeting with his players on Monday. And you know what? After that meeting, right, I've heard from some players that were in that meeting with John Gruden. After that meeting, they were just like, this is after he had made the racist trope, kind of referencing DeMaurice Smith and the lips and Michelin and everything. And a lot of the players were like, did he say the N-word? He didn't say the N-word? Okay, yeah, he had a little undertones, but we're not going to really condemn him for that. So they were kind of cool. They were kind of okay going forward. It wasn't until they left the facility that all of the stuff. So when all of us heard the news on ESPN and everything like that, they heard the news at the same time. And it was like, whoa. And so in that time, we find out that basically John Gruden hit him with the trifecta.
Yeah,
right?
He got everybody.
Racism, misogyny, and anti-gay slurs, yeah. All in one. Isn't it ironic that ESPN is talking about how the Raiders organization handles John Gruden for his behavior while he was employed with ESPN?
Yeah, I mean, lucky for them, I guess, that he wasn't working for ESPN anymore. There's a lot here, I know we want to get to some of the bigger issues with the NFL and kind of what this is, but start with the Gruden thing, and that meeting is really interesting. Why do you think that players have that line of demarcation of like, hey, if he didn't say the N-word, then I'm fine? That seems like a pretty low bar.
Right, because I could go all day long, right, with a... Did you hear? You just said like that's a little racist undertones there. That's a little racist undertones there. I've been black my whole life, right? So I hear it all the time. However, sometimes you don't condemn someone for it because maybe sometimes it comes out of ignorance, or maybe maybe it was racist undertones, but it wasn't enough at that time.
Saying there's some gray area, or that
sometimes that wasn't gray. No. In that case, in John Gruden, when he had to say about DeMaurice Smith, that wasn't gray. That was racist.
So you're not buying the line that he uses lips lying. It was about lying lips and not about the racist trope.
No, not at all. And then he definitely made a mistake when he made the Cardinal stand of, I don't have a blade of racism in my bones or my body.
As opposed to, I should go investigate myself and all, and essentially go down that road.
Yeah, absolutely. But let me get to it right now. The Raiders had to do what they had to do, right? There's no way going forward, whether it was a firing, he resigned, which he did, or a leave of absence, there's no way that the Raiders could go forward with him doing what he did in those emails and that coming to light. Now, okay, we got to that. We're okay with that. Here's where I couldn't hardly sleep last night, and here's my problem right now. My problem is a few things. Number one, who's John Gruden talking to? Himself? He's not talking to himself. Last time I checked, when you email other people.
Yeah, and we know who's on the other end of it. It was Bruce Allen, right, who was the team president. He'd been in the NFL forever, and all these. He was in Tampa. He was in Washington. I mean, Bruce Allen is a longtime NFL made man.
Right. 650,000 emails were produced during the Washington football team investigations that were in the possession now of the NFL. You mean to tell me the NFL just got hold of these emails on Friday, this past week? No, I don't believe that. That's number one. Number two, there's other people that were emailing back and forth. Three, why did you guys kind of just pick on Gruden in this time? All of this information, the investigation was on the Washington football team. Have you guys noticed that nothing has come about the Washington football team? Dan Snyder is still the owner. Something is just not right, and people aren't stupid, and you got to know that people will continue to find out, get to the bottom of this entire thing. Now, again, I am not taking up for John Gruden, John Gruden has to be fired and let go. Mm-hmm. But here's a question that I really have going forward. Are we ready? Are we ready for this world going forward? No, this ain't cancel culture, so stop it. That's not what this is. Are we ready for this, whether it's email, text message? Oh, yeah, by the way, text message will be at some point. Text messages will be fair game. Mm-hmm. Remember that. Text messages, instant messages, conversations, verbal conversations where someone said that she said or he said. Are we ready for the world going forward where we can possibly lose our careers for something that we've done? That's number one. Number two, can we change? I'm not making excuses for John Gruden, but I do know this. I know that me personally, I'm a different person than I was last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a different person from the time that I even started radio here with this station.
Yeah, I think a lot of us would make that argument. I think there's a lot of fairness to that. I wonder, and I don't know the answer to it, I wonder what would have happened if John Gruden's reaction to all of this was, yeah, I wrote those things. That's how I felt 10 years ago. I was not naive. I was ignorant, and I didn't understand where I was at the time. And over the last year and a half, and watching what's happened in this country and what happened in Minneapolis and then watching the Black Lives Matter movement, I've learned a lot. I've been talking to a lot of people, and I feel very differently. I can't believe I ever felt that way.
Absolutely.
Do you think he could have survived?
No,
probably
okay,
not, because
no,
of the trifecta
no.
he hit.
Right. Hey, Mike. No, he would not have survived. But let me tell you what he would have and could have done. He could have set up the future. He
right.
could have set up conversations. He could have set up real healing. You see, denial is the heartbeat of racism. You see what I'm saying? Repeat that again. Denial is the heartbeat of racism. And the problem, the reason why we are where we are today, is especially the NFL, because constantly we try to say, oh, I'm not racist. I don't have a racist bone in my body. Oh, that doesn't exist. That's not what I meant. All the time, there's always denial. Now you have the NFL with "end racism" on people's helmets. You have "stop racism" at the end of the end zone, painted on the. Is that really the actions? Are those really, is that the works? Because right now, what we have seen out of John Gruden, we are saying with the NFL, like, you know, you guys are the same league that made Mr. Kaepernick be blackballed from the league because he took a knee during the mm-hmm. anthem. So there's a lot of things that really got. So look, today, tomorrow, the next day, everybody is going to pile on top of John Gruden. Okay, cool. I'm not even arguing that. But I just want to challenge you to this. It's a little bigger than John Gruden.
Well, it's much bigger than John
Gruden. Bigger than John
Gruden. Of course, he is the one. We were kind of talking about this earlier. So does John Gruden get fired? G Scott with me, by the way, from G and Ursula, which you can hear every day at 9 o'clock from 9 to noon on our sister station, 97.3 Cairo FM.
Yeah.
Is Gruden out because of how he feels, right, as a racist or a sexist or a homophobe? Is he out because he was the only one stupid enough to provide written proof of how he feels? Or is he out because somebody hated him enough to leak that proof?
All three.
Yeah.
Right? All three. And there's someone within the NFL head office up there, all in their workings, that are like, you know what? I don't like you, John Gruden, and I'm going to make your life hell. And that's exactly what happened. And meanwhile... Do we think that John Gruden is the only one that has some bad emails or some bad text messages out there?
He might be the only one with bad emails.
Nah, doubt it.
Really?
Doubt it. No.
I mean, how stupid are people?
Whoa. The way we talk about email. Okay, let's get off the NFL.
Okay.
Let's talk about everyday life right now. When you say how stupid are people, we're just smarter now, and we have more of an understanding of technology.
Right.
Let's go back in a day when you had a Hotmail Gmail account, or you had an AOL Gmail account, or you had a Yahoo email account.
I still have a Yahoo email account. Yeah. Lay off the Yahoo, G.
Okay, so I'm going to say this. Did anybody send some inappropriate things back in those days? Yes, people did. They did. Because back then, you didn't really understand email. And you start talking about 10 years ago, 15 mm-hmm. years ago. There's a lot of people didn't understand email. So, yes, the answer what you're saying is man, how stupid are you? Well, I am not making any excuses for John Gruden. John Gruden, you got to go. But what I am doing and hoping going forward, I hope that all of us are able to have better conversations about this right here, about why, about we have to get rid of the denial of racism being the heartbeat of racism and how we go forward with this. Now, unfortunately, John Gruden, yeah, man, you got to go. You hit the trifecta all in the email, and I got to tell you, I ain't heard of nobody doing that. I don't know. You got some issues right there, brother. You got to go. But going forward, we need to be better. And for anybody listening right now, maybe you got kids, maybe you got children, kids in their 20s, in their 30s. Yo, is this the world? Are we really prepared for that? Are we really prepared for a world in which we make mistakes? We all do. What do you got, bro?
No, go ahead. Finish up.
No. We make mistakes. We do. But I think we are living in a world right now, Saul, in 2021 and beyond, where we are saying to everyone, yo, you make a mistake, you're done.
Well, I think what we're saying, you know, and whether it's cancel culture, if that's the phrase you like, what I say is it's essentially the market. The market is dictating this.
Yes, sir.
It's interesting that generally folks that don't like talk about cancel culture as a negative also believe the market will fix everything. But I think what you're talking about is the market. The market is saying this is not acceptable. No one's throwing John Gruden in jail. The market is saying you're not good for business. We don't want you to work here because enough fans, enough customers, essentially, are upset with the way you're handling things or saying things or what's in your heart or whatever the case may be, that they don't want to support the product. That's just the market. That's the free market at work. And if enough people feel that that stuff is inappropriate, then you don't get to say it and continue to have a job. That's called the free market.
Mm-hmm.
That's capitalism. Mm-hmm. So I understand some of the fear of where this goes. I also think that you know, in some cases, you do get what's coming to you.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder, you know, whether players, and I know you're friendly with a lot of players in the league and speak to guys a lot. Mm-hmm. Do players have a sense that someone, like in Gruden's case, that this could happen to John Gruden?
Yes,
like, are people surprised when it comes out, or they're like, yeah, no, I knew that. And I don't mean Gruden specifically, but I kind of figured that.
I talked to a few, some folks that know Gruden personally, and they didn't see it, right? Like, usually it's like, oh, yeah, no question. I had no doubt about it. It doesn't shock me or surprise me at all. But in this case, no, they were actually kind of shocked.
Really?
And was really shocked at the trifecta part. Like, that part, like, man, you covered all three?
Yeah.
And, they were a little bit surprised on that. So, I do like what you had to say, Mike, about the market, and you're right, it does. The free market decides, it dictates who, what, where, and how, all that stuff going forward. I'm just going to say this. I think it gets worse going forward, right? And I mean, are you getting worse? And I'm just saying this.
Just in culture or in the NFL?
Oh, just in culture.
Okay.
No, yeah, because a lot of times, man, when we talk about things that happen with celebrities or in pro sports and everything, I like to talk about it in real life. Like, what can we learn from this? Because sometimes people think that these happens, oh, that's in the NFL, oh, that's tragic. No. That's happening here in our regular towns and communities and homes. And
yeah.
So you better learn and be prepared from that going forward. And I just, so I'm telling you, man, this is not easy. I am glad that we're going to be having conversations going forward, but this is not easy. This is something that
people need to find the right lines, right? People need to determine what's too far, what the appropriate quote unquote punishment is for.
When do they learn that? They don't learn it in the school.
We're learning it together as a culture. We're sort of looking, and there are going to be victims along the way. People that, and I'm not saying John Gruden is one, but people that are. Taken down for maybe the wrong reason, other people who skate for the wrong reasons as well.
Yeah.
But I do think that in some ways we're cleaning up some of the issues that have pervaded for years and years. And if John Gruden is not the only person in the NFL who has felt entitled enough to not only feel this way, but talk this way, write this way, etc. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who's gotten caught. He's the guy who unfortunately for him, there happened to be an investigation into the team where he was writing the emails too. Otherwise, we would never find out about John Gruden.
No. You're right about that, and you're right. We are cleaning up.
And don't you think there's a lot more John Grudens?
Oh, absolutely.
In the NFL, yes. In other leagues, etc. I mean, that doesn't feel like he's a lone wolf.
Yes. Now, here's what I don't know about John Gruden, right? And when you say, are there a lot of John Grudens? Sure, there are a lot of John Grudens, right? John Gruden responded on Friday or this past weekend. He responded, especially, John, you knowing that there's stuff in your past, the way you responded did not help you at all. But when we say there's a lot of John Grudens, yes, they're right. But what's John Grudens? Are there the John Grudens that know they have stuff in the past and they just try to pretend like that it doesn't exist? Are there a bunch of John Grudens that are just straight up just denying everything? Mm. Are there a bunch of John Grudens right now that's like, hey, you know what? And I get letters written to me all the time at the station saying to me, hey, you know what, G-Man, look. When I first listened to you, I didn't like you. I had these ways of thinking.
Right.
But since I've been listening to you, I've gotten to learn, right? I've gotten to learn things. And I've been on the radio for 7-8 years now.
Has it been that long? It feels like it's been forever. It feels in some ways like it's been longer than that.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Gruden will say some of that. I wonder if he says, look, I did feel that way about gay people when I wrote that. What was it, 2011?
Is he allowed to have that space?
Today. He's not going to keep his Raiders job, obviously. But what if he comes out? What if the next interview with John Gruden, I'm speculating entirely here, he comes out and says, look, I absolutely wrote those things. I felt that way at the time, and I was not happy about the way the whole Michael Sam thing went down, and I didn't understand it. And then Carl Nassib, who's on my team, came out.
Yeah.
And I talked to him, and I met with him, and I listened to him. And you know what? I feel differently today. And if I could go back and say what I said about Michael Sam now, I would say it differently, and I wouldn't use that slang to talk about Roger Goodell. The opportunity for that to have happened was certainly there. I don't know whether John Gruden took advantage of what was in front of him, but isn't that what we've been talking about in the country for the last few years of trying to listen and learn?
Absolutely. But I got to go back to, I don't mean a yeah, but you, because that was an excellent point that you made, but my yeah, but comes from what you just said about 2 minutes ago. You said the free market decides, and the free market does not allow people the space to do that.
Good point.
The free market capitalism does not. So if you want to get that job going forward, right, if you want to prepare like, OK, yeah, I'm going to lose this job, but I want to make sure I set myself up for later. Then if he comes out, and by the way, by the time when he was doing that, when those emails came out, John Gruden was 48 years old at the time. So somebody would say, oh, my goodness, you're 48 years old. How in the world are you thinking that way? Right. Because the world we live in today, especially in the public space, does not give us space to be vulnerable and admit those things. I have the best. Here's the unfortunate part. I have some of the best conversations with people offline, off the radio, in real life. You, anybody else, you probably have the best conversations at your kitchen table as opposed to the conference table in your office. We need to get better as a society of having these conversations. The only way that Avery and Cecily going forward in 50 years when they're older, 50 and 60 years, the only way that things are going to be better for them, Mike, is if we today are better at having these conversations. If John Gruden, and I don't know what his feeling is, I have no idea, but if people have the space to say, you know what? At this time, on this date, when I sent that email, I'm not making any excuses. Mm-hmm. I said, I felt that way then, but I've changed. I've changed. You've changed. Everybody right now listening, I don't care what, it doesn't have to be whether or not it's racism. It could be anything. Maybe you changed your diet. Maybe you changed the kind of husband that you are. Maybe you changed with the kind of father you are. Maybe you changed with the kind of wife that you are.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I understand what you're saying here, because we have to give space for people to change. We also have to take accountability for things we've said and done. And so, again, finding that balance of where is their accountability versus where is there room to grow and improve and change it's a constantly moving target, and there's no set answer for those things. Mm-hmm. I think that's why they make for interesting conversation and why talk shows like yours and mine exist, to try to talk through those things. We're going to disagree. We're going to take time to find where those lines are. But I think that's kind of the point of what we do for a living, and why those conversations, you're right, G, mm-hmm. have to happen at your kitchen table, at your conference table, and hopefully here in the public space as well. So you know who I'm jealous of?
What's that? Who's that?
I'm a little jealous of Ursula. She gets 3 hours of debating and talking with you every day. I could use like something like that. That like wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. So
you wait. You do know that Ursula and I on our show, we argue and fight on our show
as you
day.
Should.
Every day, because we get down and deep. And the reason, one of the biggest reasons that we do argue, because Ursula is really a news person, like really, really news. So anything that, imagine you and I having a conversation and I'm talking like, yeah, but I heard this. And then I say sources.
Oh.
Ursula will hit me with sources.
Oh.
So when I have a debate back and forth with her, I got to come out with the sources. Well, this was said in Newsweek magazine on this date. Yeah, she keeps me on my toes, man. Okay.
Well, then I let you come in here and just run rabble over everybody. So run roughshod. Nice job.
Yeah, appreciate
thanks, buddy.
You,
thanks for coming on today. I love talking to you about this stuff and a whole lot more. So we'll hey, do man,
Friday?
More fun on Friday. Yeah, we'll do
right.
it Friday.
More fun on Friday.
More fun on Friday. Promise.
All right. See you guys.
See you, buddy. There you go. There's G. Yep. Scott, G. and Ursula. You can hear them 9 to noon 97.3 Cairo FM, and I think there's a lot to the whole Gruden conversation. I think G brings up some good points. I think another one is just about accountability and privilege. How privileged does John Gruden and people like him feel to be able to talk that way, act that way, write that way, etc.? And how much does the NFL continue to allow and reinforce that privilege when so far nothing has happened to anybody in the Washington organization? Dan Snyder's still the owner. I'm curious, what about Bruce Allen? Like, are we going to hear more about the Bruce Allen side of this? It's totally fine that the president of that team was sending topless pictures of his cheerleaders back and forth with an ESPN color commentator at that time. That feels like a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, this feels like the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg.
Jeez.
And pictures that, from reports, those cheerleaders felt forced into. The victims in that case have been calling for the NFL to release their investigation, and they're saying that they're not releasing it for the sake of the victims, for the privacy. It's time the NFL just releases all of this.
Well, and how many people end up getting caught up in that, and why the like picking and choosing, right? Oh, well, we're going to burn Gruden, but we're not going to burn this person. We're going to burn this person, but not that one. I mean, I would like to think that it's because the NFL has more information and they are doing a good job of filtering the truly terrible from the innocent people who shouldn't get caught up in it. But
they
has anything over the years, right, exactly, given you the belief that Roger Goodell and the NFL deserves that?
No.
They've tended to act only when forced to act. That's the NFL's reputation, and that's their history. When did they start acting on domestic violence? When Ray Rice got caught on video.
Video,
and
right.
not a day before. Not a second before. Oh, there's video? Oh, we'll act. And by the way, he eventually made it back into the league. Oh, there's video? We'll act. Oh, well, that's hearsay. Oh, that's just hearsay. Yeah, we don't know about. Oh, there's video? Oh, yeah, no, we'll act.
Can't ignore it.
Oh, we got emails? Oh, okay, we'll act. But how many, I mean, you know, like Roger Goodell didn't know that John Gruden was whatever he was for that long? Of course he did. Now, maybe he didn't have enough proof to be able to win a battle, but at some point you would hope that the owners, the commissioner, et cetera, would find a way to do their own version of using that economic theory of using the market and blackball those guys. Don't allow them into your club. The NFL is a club. And you decide who you want in and who you don't. All right, coming up next, good news. You want good news? It's been kind of an ugly. It's back and forth. We got Kraken starting tonight. Happy about that. Ugly story with John Gruden. How about just good, solid Seahawks news? We haven't had it in a while.
Let's pivot.
We'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.